Well, good afternoon, everyone. The trip actually wasn't that bad. My kids are learning to be good little travelers. Money helps. I've taught them at a very young age that if they're good in the vehicle, they get paid. So we were able to make the trip in 8 hours, which was a bit of a miracle. I was surprised, though, I have to admit, leaving the nice, warm climate of Prince George and coming to a much cooler Calgary. You know, I had anticipated, you know, coming into a balmy weather, but apparently not so. But then you can look forward to Monday. Monday is the first day of spring, so you know, that are in a colder climate have things to look forward to. With spring, I don't know how much you get here, but back where we are, a lot of house cleaning, spring cleaning, and garage sales. You know, they seem to pop up everywhere. And they've actually got professional people now that go around to garage sales looking to see what they can find. And every once in a while, they find some pretty interesting items. Well, the devil once, according to legend, held a garage sale. And he had all of his tools for sale. And the prospective buyers assembled and perused all of his tools. And one of the buyers came across a very odd tool, really odd shape. And underneath it was a sign. Instead of the price, it had "not for sale." And the prospective buyer took the devil aside and said, "Why? Why are you selling all your tools and not this one?" And the devil answered, "I can spare all my other tools, but this one tool I cannot spare. It is the most useful tool that I have. It is called discouragement. And with this tool, I can work myself into a heart that is otherwise inaccessible. And when I'm in, I can do anything that I desire." Discouragement. I read an article a few months back, and it said, did you know, this is a quote from the article, did you know that there is a plague sweeping our country? It's not the Beijing flu, or cancer, or even a common cold. This outbreak, though, is just as deadly as one of the most dreaded diseases known to man. It is the epidemic of discouragement. And there are three reasons, this article points out, why discouragement is such a potent problem. Number one, it's universal. Not one of us are immune to discouragement. Everyone you know has been discouraged at some time in their life, or will be. The second reason it's a plague, it's reoccurring. Being discouraged once does not give you an immunity from the disease again. In fact, once you've had it, you are more susceptible the next time. And the third reason this article pointed out was that it is highly contagious. Discouragement spreads by even casual contact. And I'm sure all of us here have rubbed shoulders with people that are discouraged, and it starts to drag you down. And you get bummed out when others are discouraged. And those were the three things. And if there's one thing that is constant in our society, it's getting faster and faster and faster, and expectations are growing, and there are no shortage of things to discourage us. You know, in Psalms 55, verse 5 and 7, David lamented a little bit. He was discouraged. And I know in my life I have felt this way. He said, "Fearfulness and trembling have come upon me. Horror has overwhelmed me. Oh, that I had the wings of a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. I would fly away and stay in the desert." And I know there are times when I've said to myself, "Man, I wish I had a cave. You know, just somewhere where I could go and unplug from everything." Discouragement is a plague. You know, I had the opportunity to spend some time with a psychiatrist, and his specialty was dealing with discouragement. And he told me, he said, "You know, people don't truly recognize discouragement." He said, "It is dust." He said, "If you've ever had to clean a house, you'll understand. You don't see the dust. It just comes, and all of a sudden, it's there." And he said, "Discouragement is like dust." You know, when you look in the Bible, how many of God's people in the Bible were discouraged? You know, you could look at David. You know, Elijah. Elijah, when you think of, you know, God's men in the Bible, I mean, best described as perhaps, you know, God's Iron Man. He was discouraged. He sat under a juniper tree and wished to die. You know, Paul, look at the experiences of Paul and how discouraged he got. You know, in 2 Corinthians, it said he despaired even of life. You know, he was at an utter loss. You know, I read a letter a while back, and it's actually a humorous letter, and some of you have probably heard it. But I think it expresses things that we sometimes can't express other than by hearing it. And this lady wrote, and it's humorous, but I think it shows something. She goes, "I wish I were a bear." She goes, "If I were a bear, I would get to hibernate. I would do nothing but sleep for 6 months. I could get used to that. And another thing, before I hibernate, I'm supposed to eat myself stupid. That wouldn't bother me either. And if I were a mama bear, everyone knows that I mean business. Anyone that bothered me or my cubs, I could smack. I could even smack my cubs if they got out of line. My husband would expect me to growl when I woke up. He would expect me to have hairy legs and excess body fat. And he would like it. Oh, how I wish I were a bear." You know, have you ever thought in your life, "Oh, I just wish, you know, expectations were different, or I wish I could have done this"? Discouragement is always present. You know, even Jesus in Mark 8, verse 12, said he sighed deep within his spirit. You know, many of the world's leaders have been discouraged. Winston Churchill said that he was plagued by dark hounds, plagued by the black dog of despair. Sorry. That is what Winston Churchill said. You know, in the book, The Problems of the Spirit-Filled Life, William Deal states this, and I found this to be very accurate. "There is no such thing as an unemotional person. Everyone has emotions. Everyone expresses emotions in either a quiet way, a controlled way, or a demonstrative manner, or some in an explosive manner." He goes on, "We cannot trust our feelings, and yet so often Christians are prisoners of their own feelings, and consequently, because they're prisoners of their feelings, they are very up and down." And he goes on in this book to talk about how Christians, trying to live a life, you know, a good life, because they know that that's expected, not only from others, but from themselves, they go through wider roller coasters. Discouragement is a feeling that will come upon all of us. You know, discouragement is not a sin. And that is something that I think we all need to know. Yes, discouragement can come as a result of sin, but it is of itself not sin. What I want to do today is I want to look at two sources of encouragement. Because I think all of us, if we haven't been discouraged, will either be around someone who is, or will become discouraged. Would you turn to Romans 15? We'll start in verse 4. In most of the scriptures, I'll read from the King James Version. Romans 15 and verse 4. "For whatever was written," you know, when you look at the Bible, whatever was written in earlier times was written for us. It was for our instructions that through perseverance and the encouragement of the scriptures, we might have hope. "Now may the God who gives perseverance and encouragement grant you to be of the same mind with one another according to Jesus Christ, that with one accord you may with one voice glorify God and the Father, the Lord Jesus Christ." So the first source of encouragement is the Bible. You know, especially this time of year, as people prepare for Passover, they look at themselves and they beat themselves up and they say, "Oh, what a wretched man that I am." You need to look at God's word as a source of encouragement. You know, God does not expect you to be perfect. He expects you to be trying to be perfect. No matter what we go through in life, God will be there. You know, when you look at your family, your friends, your acquaintances, there's only one that you know will be there, and that is God. In Joshua 1, verse 9, you know, think about this, because this is your Creator talking to you. He says, have I not commanded you? So here he's saying, I'm commanding you, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Why? For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Even if you were to flee out into the desert, as David wrote, he would still be there. You know, the Bible is full of stories of people that went through terrible things. And they're there, why? They're there, they're written for us so that we can be encouraged. David, you know, look at the stories of David, you know, what he went through. Joseph, you know, can you imagine living the life that Joseph lived? What about Israel and Egypt? What about Job? You know, think of the roller coaster that Job was on. You know, it says in Psalms 18, verse 6, David talking, he says, having distress, so he was discouraged. Having distress, I called my God. When you're discouraged, and I can tell you this from personal experience, the first thing you do is shut down, and you try to avoid those that can help. Having distress, I called to my God for help, and from his temple he heard my voice. My cry came before him and his ears. The first thing that we need to do when we're discouraged, and the first thing you need to do when you encounter someone that's discouraged, is this: deliberately put yourself in front of God. Tell him how you feel. You know, there are times when you can't explain to your best friend how you feel. But God already knows. Sit down and tell him. You know, in Psalms 42, verse 5, it says, why are you cast down, O my soul? Why so disturbed within me? And then in verse 11, put your hope in God. You know, all of us, no matter where we are in our life, need to remember God already knows. You may not be able to talk to your friend, but you can certainly talk to God. He's never there or never gone. You know, in Psalms 121, a beautiful psalm, the whole psalm, you know, talking about how he's always there. He'll always be in his office. You can always call him. You know, he won't leave. You know, he'll watch over your life. A beautiful psalm that you can read. But the first thing you have to do is force yourself. You know, you may not want to, but as God said to Moses, be still. You know, be still, pick up your Bible, read it, and you'd be surprised. You know, God's creation, that is something that I have always found inspiring. You know, I enjoy getting out, sitting by a beaver dam or a river, anything, just to be outside. But if you turn to Isaiah 41, I think you'll find something in here, at least for me, that explains a lot when you look at God's creation. Psalms 41 and verse 4, who has wrought and done it? So here God is asking a question which he doesn't really need to ask because we all know. You know, calling the generations from the beginning, who did this? And then he answers his own question. I, the Lord, the first and with the last, I am he. So he is the one. You know, what a challenge. Who called the generations? Who created this earth? No, God did. Verse 5, the isles saw and feared, and the ends of the earth were afraid. They drew near and came. So what he's talking about is his creation. As he was creating the earth, it obeyed him. It did what he wanted. In verse 6, they helped. And again, it's talking about his creation. They helped everyone his neighbor. And everyone said to his brother, be of good courage. You know, and I don't profess to understand all of the Bible perfectly, but what I can see in this is when God was creating the world, when he was creating his creation, he designed it to cooperate. He designed it to encourage. Verse 7, so the carpenter encouraged the goldsmith, and he's still talking about his creation. And he that smooths with the hammer, him that smote with the anvil, saying it is ready for soldering and fastening it with nails, that it should not be moved. So as God was creating his creation, he created it to encourage, and he created it in a manner that it can encourage us. And then in verse 8, a very interesting verse, But you, O Israel, art my servant, Jacob, who I have chosen, and the seed of Abraham, my friend. You know, if I understand this, he is saying we are part of that creation. I want my people to work. I want my people to cooperate and encourage one another as my creation does. You know, in Hebrews 13, verse 5, you know, a very famous scripture, all of us know, you know, that God will never leave, never forsake us. But when you read the whole verse, it says, let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. You know, a lot of our discouragement comes from wanting, desiring, not being content with what God has given us. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. You know, never will God leave us. Never will he forsake us. And we need to be content. You know, and I'd like to ask a question. What is God's greatest creation, or what will it be? Because he said back in Isaiah that his creation was done to cooperate, done to encourage. We are. You and I, sitting right here, are the most important part of his creation. When you look out at a mountain or a river or any other aspect of God's creation, you need to look at it from his perspective. It is beautiful, it is amazing, and it was done for you and me. Mankind is God's creation, and for a very important reason. You know, we play a huge part in his ultimate plan. We are going to be his sons and daughters. And it's interesting, when you're called, it says in 1 John that you're placed into a body. Why? To have fellowship with God and each other. You and I are part of that creation. The first thing we do when we're discouraged is we look to God and his Bible. The second thing is you and I. We need to be a source of encouragement. We are part of God's creation, and he designed his creation to encourage. What I'd like to do is I'd like to start describing a person. In your own mind, you all know this person, but how long will it take for you to recognize who I'm talking about? Joseph is his name. The name Joseph means God shall add. He is an incredibly hard worker. He's incredibly generous. He's willing to be used in whatever manner is necessary for the advancement of the cause that he so dearly held. And that cause was the same cause you have and I have. He was respected by the people of his church, the congregation that he fellowshipped in. He truly helped the progress of the church. And if you look closely at his life, you'll see him speaking boldly, and you'll see him doing the most humble of jobs, even performing manual labor. Joseph was a Levite from Cyprus. And Joseph was blessed beyond the limits of his name, and he was given a nickname by those who loved him, the congregation that he fellowshipped in. He was the one who, when the church was being terrorized, held up Saul and introduced Paul to the church. He is known for giving comfort, consolation, and encouragement. And he was given the name, the nickname, Barnabas. You know, have you ever asked yourself, where would the church be if Barnabas hadn't held up Paul? Every last one of us needs to be held up. Every last one of us needs to hold someone up. God's church needs a lot of Barnabases. Are you known, am I known, to be an encourager? A person who can just pick up your spirits. You know, it takes wisdom. One who is known and trusted as a son of encouragement. You know, it says that we'll all be given a new name, you know, in Revelation. Have you thought for a moment, maybe that name will be given to you by your congregation, those you fellowship with? Maybe not. But what would your name be if the congregation was the one to pick it? What would your name be? I'd like to read a short story. And this event actually happened. This individual went on to become one of the most powerful men in the United States. As a young man, he went into a counselor, and he was dealing with feelings of inadequacy, failure. And he told the counselor he wanted to go to college. But he felt that he had too many strikes against him. After sharing all of his hopes and all of his hurts, he waited. He waited for the counselor to give him some words. Instead of hearing positive plans of action, he heard words of discouragement. The counselor started by saying, "College is just too expensive nowadays anyway." And then he told the young man that he didn't have enough smarts, and he would probably drop out of college in the first year. And then he finally said, "You'd be better off finding something else to do with your life." The power of words. You know, when you look in the Bible, what does the Bible say about words? They have the power of what? Life and death. You know, Proverbs 18:21. And we all think of words as having the power of death, but they also hold the power of life. You know, if the phone rings at 1 o'clock in the morning and your brother is really discouraged and just needs someone to talk to, are you going to be there? Proverbs 12, verse 25 says, "Anxiety in the heart of a man causes depression, but a good word makes him glad." I did some studies, and studies have indicated that 92% of the anxieties that we face, the stresses and anxieties that we face, can be relieved by simple words of encouragement. Just reminding people of what is important. You know, when you look at your life, what is important? What truly is the most important thing you have? How do you look at yourself? How do you look at those around you? You know, the NIV says, "But a kind word cheers them up." You know, are you known for kind words when someone is depressed? I'd like to read another very short story. This one was written by an army chaplain. I believe that this was during the Iraq War, but you can't quote me on that. He said, "A soldier stopped by my chapel office. And he poured his heart out to me. He said, I said very little. I did not know what to say. After he was through, he got up and he said, 'Thanks, chaplain. You don't know how much you've helped me today.' And he was right. I didn't. All I did was listen." And it continues on to talk about how much time will you spend just listening? When someone comes up and pours their heart out, are you quick to correct, quick to offer guidance, quick to say, "Do this or do that"? Or are you quick to listen, you know, to just hear before you speak? You know, think of why God puts such a premium on words. You know, we need to remind each other of God's power. We need to remind each other of God's plan for us, for all of us here. You know, in Proverbs 25, verse 11, it says, "Like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in the right circumstances." Do you pray for the right words? You know, there's many things that we need to pray for, but do you pray that when your friend, your brother, needs help, you will know the right thing to say? You know, what did Job's friends say when he was at the darkest hour of his life? "Curse God and die." That was what advice they had for Job. I hope all of us would have better words. You know, not all of the jobs in the church are prominent. You know, not all of them are glamorous. But I believe that the people that will make the biggest difference in this congregation and in this church are those who hold up their brother, those who hold up their sister. As a congregation, you know, there are people that should be here that aren't. You know, when you read the parable of the lost son, how far was that son away from home when he was spotted? You know, look at the encouragement that the father gave. You know, there are people that should be here. Will we encourage them? Will we be there when they come? Would you turn to 1 Thessalonians 5? 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 11. Wherefore, comfort each other and edify one another, even as you are also so doing. You know, we're there to provide comfort. We're there to provide encouragement. That is why God placed us into a fellowship. You know, the more you get to know someone, two things can occur. You start to see their faults and failings, and you can start to criticize and tear down and correct. Or you can start to love them. As you prepare for Passover, about a month away, you know, when you look at the incredible sacrifice that Christ made, that should be the most encouraging thing that you can look at. And when you start to look at yourself and see your faults, do you let his sacrifice encourage you to overcome, or do you allow it to tear you down? You need friends. You need someone to talk to. You know, Christ was tempted in every way. Christ was even discouraged. He sighed deep in his soul. Talk to him. You know, let's continue in 1 Thessalonians, because I think the next few verses are very important. Because when you look at Paul's life, you know, an incredible apostle. They were all incredible, but you look at his writings. And yet Paul was discouraged many, many, many times. And he went on to continue writing here in verse 12. And I beseech you, brethren, to know those which labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them highly in love for their work's sake, and be at peace among yourselves. You know, I can't imagine what it'd be like to be a minister and have to step in and intervene in fights. And they occur. You know, I've been in a church my whole life. Any of us that say it doesn't happen is kidding ourselves. But we have to esteem those that labor over us. You know, you have to look at your pastor, look at Mr. Saloma and the other elders, and hold an incredible amount of esteem for the work that they do. They probably have the most lonely job of any that I can imagine. And that's just my opinion. You know, the more you get to know them, the more you understand how lonely it can be. Look at Paul's life and how discouraged he was. You know, Paul relied heavily on two people, Aquila and Priscilla, two close friends. You know, we need to hold up our pastors, our elders. We need to hold each other up. And we need to be smart if we start getting discouraged. You know, you may not need professional help, but you do need family help. You know, there's a proverb that says a brother is born for adversity. And it's funny, because when I was in a conversation with someone and I said, you know, we're all brothers and sisters, and I hope that's not true, they said, well, of course it is. And yet we shouldn't. It says we should be at peace with ourselves. As we get to know people, will we know their shortcomings? Absolutely. Who among us is perfect? We need to hold them up the same way that Christ holds us up. You know, each of us must diligently learn how to encourage. It's not easy. You know, I'm a bit of a perfectionist. You know, when things aren't really perfect, I tend to get discouraged. And I need to change that. I acknowledge that I need to change that. But I also see other people that when things aren't going just the way they should, they cut and run. And all of us sitting here today are here for each other, every last one of us. And there are people that aren't here that perhaps should be. And there will be people that God will add. And I'd like to ask this question. When you look around this room, what do you see? You know, ask yourself, what do you see? And how do you feel? Elijah thought he was alone. You know, he thought he was alone. And loneliness is very dangerous. And God simply reminded him that he wasn't alone. I venture to say in this room, there's probably someone that feels they're alone. And they need to go to God, and they need to go to their brothers, and we need to go to them. We need to find them, because we're family. And I don't think any of us really understand, to the extent that God does, how critical we are to each other. You know, we have lots of brothers and sisters to help. When Elijah was overwhelmed, God simply reassured him that there was 100. And then Elijah did something. He went and enlisted a helper, Elisha. When you're discouraged, when you're reminded that you're not alone, reach out to someone. And if you are that person that has reached out to, you know, don't be like Job's friends. You know, be like the father in the parable of the lost son, who goes out, puts a robe on, kills the fatted calf. You know, be that person. The power of a friend is incredible. The power of words hold the key to life and death. And only we control our words. You know, we need to pray for wisdom. Robert Schuller tells a story of a banker. This banker always tossed a coin into the cup of the legless beggar who sat outside his bank. But unlike everyone else, the banker would always insist on getting one of the pencils that the man had beside him. The banker would say to the legless beggar, "You are a merchant, and I always expect good value from the merchants I deal with." One day, the legless beggar was gone, and the banker was worried. He didn't know where he'd gone. He just vanished. Some time passed, and the banker had forgotten about him. And then he walked into a professional building, and there in the concession stand sat the legless beggar. And the legless beggar now owned his own business. And he reached out to the banker and says, "I've always hoped that you would come by one day." He said, "You are largely responsible for me being here. You kept telling me I was a merchant, and I started to believe it." And then it goes on. And he says, "You gave me self-respect. You gave me something to look at, and you caused me to look at myself differently. You know, when you look around this room, what do you see? I see future sons and daughters of God." That's what we are. And we need to be reminding ourselves and reminding each other, because everything else doesn't matter. Really, that is the only thing. Do you see yourself as a beggar? Or do you see yourself as a son or daughter of God? When you see people sitting beside you, what do you see? You know, you have to force yourself to see what God sees. And you have to force yourself to see what he sees in you as well. You know, we are, as a group of people, perhaps harder on ourselves than anyone else. And yet we need to look at ourselves in the same manner that God does. Do we look for our faults and our sins? Absolutely. What do we do with them after we find them? We talk to our God. He already knew they were there. In a certain mountain village, and now this story, I don't know if it's true, but I think it encapsulates this point very well. In a certain mountain village in Europe several centuries ago, a nobleman wondered what legacy he could leave to his town. Back then, the noblemen kind of were the protector of their town. And he wanted to know what legacy he could leave. At last, he decided to build them a church. No one saw the complete plans for the church until it was finished. He very carefully delegated the jobs. And when it was finished, he gathered the town. And they all marveled at the beauty of the church and its completeness. And then one of the townsmen said, "But where are the lamps? How will the church be lighted?" And the nobleman smiled. He took them around and he showed them the brackets that he put into the wall. Then he took them out and he gave each family a lamp. And he said, "When you come to church, you bring the lamp and you hang it in its chosen spot. And each time you are here, the area where you hang your lamp will be lighted." And the nobleman said, "And each time you are not here, that area will be dark. And this is to remind you that whenever you fail to come to church, some part of God's house will be dark." You know, when we look at ourselves, when we're grappling with the struggles that we face, and sometimes discouragements, we need to remember, if we're not at church, some part of God's house will be dark. When we see our friend, or our brother, or our sister, struggling with discouragement or something else, we need to remind them how important it is to be here. You have to deliberately put yourself in front of God. You know, we need each other more than I think we know. The story that I just read reminds me of a scripture, which I'd like to use as we wind this down. Would you turn to Hebrews 10? Because there are people that I firmly believe should be with us, and there are people that God will add. He wants his house to be full of light. You know, the Bible tells us, let our light so shine. You know, how can it shine if we don't let it? We are our biggest help. Turn to Hebrews 10, and we'll start in verse 24. Actually, in verse 23, it says, let us hold fast the profession of faith without wavering. You know, when you look at what God has promised, you have to make it real. And not just for you, but for every person that you fellowship with. For he is faithful that promised. You know, our Creator, his Son, you know, God the Father and the Son are faithful. They will finish the work that they have started. In verse 24, and let us consider, you know, take time, think about how to provoke one another. You know, I've been provoked in my life, most of it not good. You know, usually when you're provoked to anger or frustration. But we're to consider how to provoke one another unto love and good works. That takes time. It takes thought. It takes getting to know someone, getting to know each other, and not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. Discouragement leads to that. And not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting or encouraging one another, and even more so as you see the day approaching. You know, do you see the day approaching? When you look at this society, do you see the evil in this society? Do you see the need to pick up your friend, you know, your brother, your sister, the person you will spend eternity with? You know, we will spend eternity with each other. How hard is it to answer the phone and to offer them a kind word? Remember, discouragement is like dust. You don't see it coming. It just accumulates. It just accumulates. Every one of us is the elect of God. You know, when you think about it from that perspective, if Jesus Christ were to phone you and ask for help, and to say, I just need a few words of encouragement, what would you do for him? What words would you offer him? When his brother or his sister calls you and needs the same, what will you do? You know, we need to stay in tune with the Bible. We need to stay firmly in tune with the fact that we are God's elect. You know, we have the same inheritance as Jesus. And so does the person sitting behind us or beside us. You know, Matthew 21 describes a horrible time, a time described as a great tribulation. When I look out at the world right now, there are myriads of things that discourage and get a person down. And it will only get worse. And all you have is your Creator and those he has chosen to give you. You know, have you thought of it that way? You were called and placed into a body, and so were the rest of us. We were given to each other for a reason, and one of those reasons is to encourage one another. And I think when we start to look at each other from a little different perspective, and when we start to look at ourselves from a different perspective, we won't get quite so discouraged, because discouragement is a disease. And I've seen many, many, many people, especially as they get closer to Passover, look at their lives and get discouraged. There are people that no longer fellowship with us. They've beat themselves up. We can't let that happen to us. You can't let it happen to you, and you can't let it happen to your brother or sister. We need each other. You know, it is a tradition in the church at the end of the Passover service to read some of Christ's last words. You know, we read scriptures in John. And it struck me a while back just how many times God reminds our Creator, you know, the one who sacrificed his life, reminds us how much we need each other. You know, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have this love for one another.